I stopped to examine it. If we put bookshelves along the walls and a window seat under that one window, this would make a terrific library, I told Mom. Wouldn't it be fun to have our own library? It could be sort of like the ones in British movies. It's a possibility, Mom said. She picked up a rag and a can of cleanser and added, I'm going to give the bathrooms a thorough going over. If you want me, I'll be upstairs. I leaned against the wall of the small room, just inside the door that leads to the kitchen. I tried to visualize the bookcase-lined walls with a comfortable chair over there, maybe a lamp table. We could use the one with the nick in it that Mom almost gave to a garage sale. But the imaginary layout suddenly disappeared, and a film shimmered across my mind. Shadows of objects, so softly blurred that I couldn't make them out, glowed and faded, pulsing like a heartbeat. The air in the room ruffled softly against my face, and I could smell warm skin and hair. Someone was close by.
Ayúdame.
The word, vibrating with terror, blew like a cold breath against my cheek. Trembling, gasping with fear, I reached out to steady myself against the wall. It was firm and solid. The mist vanished, and once again the room was still and bright, with dust motes lazily drifting inside the band of sunlight that streamed through the uncovered window. Who are you? I managed to whisper to this invisible woman. What do you want? The room was blank, as though the vision and the voice had never taken place. My fear slowly turned to anger. I don't want to be involved in this. It's not fair. Why are you doing this to me? I demanded. No answer came, but I didn't need one. I'd just had more proof that the thread which tied me to an existence beyond this world had not yet been broken. I was still vulnerable, as though I were a link from one world to the next. Did I have to accept this? What were my choices? What was I going to do? My knees wobbled, so I slid down the wall and sat cross-legged on the bare wooden floor. Was that voice a hallucination? No. It was too real. Those terrified, pitiful cries for help were directed at me. I groaned and pressed my palms against my forehead. I wanted to be freed from all this, to be in control of my own mind. Okay, there was a way to handle it. I could tell Mom and Dad everything and ask for help. Maybe a psychiatrist could help me get rid of this spirit. But how could I turn my back on those heartbreaking pleas? If I ignored them, what would that poor, desperate woman do? Who would help her? I realized I could no more walk away from this unseen spirit than I could if she were flesh and blood standing before me, begging for my help. But our contact would have to be kept secret. I couldn't risk people knowing. Remembering the look in Marcy's eyes, I knew what they'd think. I shivered, realizing what the consequences might be. Did I have enough courage to carry this through? Deliberately, I made the choice. I put my hands into my lap, straightened my shoulders, and stared into the room, wanting the woman to make contact again. Listen to me, whoever you are, I said. I promise to try to help you, but I can't help you this way. I need to know what happened to you. I need to know who you are. If you want me to help you, then you've got to help me. Do you understand? I waited tensely, almost afraid to breathe, but there was only silence. I heard the doorbell and Mom's footsteps as she answered it. Sarah, she called. Dee Dee's here. Staggering to my feet, I dusted off my shorts, tugged my T-shirt into place, and gave one last look around the empty, quiet room. Nothing. Coming, I yelled. It wasn't just Dee Dee who had come to visit. I followed the sound of voices into the den and saw a guy who was a couple of inches shorter than me standing next to Dee Dee. She tied her damp hair back from her face, and her skin still glowed from the sun at the pool. Hi, Sarah, Dee Dee said. This is Eric Hendrickson. Eric studied me so intently, I stared back, hoping he'd get the message to cut it out. He wasn't bad-looking, but not great-looking either. His tan was blotchy, red-streaked across the bridge of his nose and cheeks, and his short-cropped hair was sun-bleached. He was dressed in white shorts and shirt and carried a tennis racket. I wondered what kind of nut would play tennis during the hottest part of an August day. "Before I get back to work, would any of you like something cold to drink?" Mom asked.
"Thanks. I could use a beer," Eric said.
"No," Mom answered. "No beer."
"I'm 18," Eric said.
"No beer," Mom repeated with a smile. "There are soft drinks in the refrigerator. If you'd like, Sarah can get them for you." She left.
"That was real smart, Eric," Dee Dee said sarcastically.
"Hey, what's the matter with you, chubby?"
Eric complained.
"She asked, didn't she?"
"You're a clod," Dee Dee muttered. This was awful. I tried to distract them from their argument by asking, "Why are we just standing here? Why don't we sit down?" Dee Dee curled on one end of the sofa, as far away from Eric as she could get. He flopped and slumped, his muscular legs stretched out into the room.
"I saw you yesterday when your family was moving in," Eric said to me.
"You gonna go to Memorial?" "I guess," I answered, "if that's where everybody around here goes to high school." "Some of the kids go to private schools, St. Agnes, St. John's, Kincaid," Dee Dee said.
"What do you think of the house?"
Eric asked me. His expression was so wide-eyed with innocence, it looked fake. I got the feeling he knew it. What was with him? Dee Dee glared at Eric.
"That's a stupid question. Why don't we talk about movies? Has anybody seen that new horror one? The one that takes place in a cemetery?"
"It's not a stupid question. I really want to know what Sarah thinks of the house." A trace of a smile flickered around his mouth.
"Why don't you want to talk about it, Dee Dee?"
For just an instant, I suspected him of mocking me. But it was Dee Dee he was looking at. She was so angry, her face was red.
"You and your cruel sense of humor," she snapped. "I already told you what Sarah asked me about the house. You're a creep, Eric."
I didn't understand what was disturbing her so much. If Eric wanted an answer, I'd give him one, but I'd hedge. I wish Dee Dee hadn't told him what I'd asked. "Mom loves this place," I answered. "I was just cleaning the maid's room, and we were talking about making it into a library." Dee Dee jumped into the conversation as though she'd been reprieved.
"A library? Don't tell me you like to read."
"I do like to read, a lot."
"That's great," she said. "I'd love to see what books you've got."
"You can help me unpack them," I told her, "and borrow any you like." Right now, I didn't want to talk about books. I thought about the woman who had called to me in Spanish. It dawned on me that maybe I could get some information from Eric and Dee Dee.
"Did anyone in the Holt family speak Spanish?" I asked. Dee Dee gave a little start.
"Adam probably learned some in school. We all did. Why in the world do you want to know that?"
"What about a Spanish-speaking maid? You lived right next door to the Holts. You'd know if they had a maid."
"A maid?"
She shrugged.
"I have no idea. I told you, the Holts kept to themselves. Let's talk about something else."
"If they had a maid, you'd see her going in and out, wouldn't you?"
"Not necessarily," she answered impatiently. "I suppose I would if the Holts had day help, someone who arrived in a car. But if they had live-in help, especially if she was an illegal alien like Lupita and didn't want to be noticed, well, that's a different matter. Mrs. Taylor, who lives on the corner, had a live-in maid for over a year before I knew she was there, and she wasn't here illegally. And I remember when..."
I interrupted her. In a way, I was talking to myself, trying to sort through my own confusion. "Are you sure there wasn't someone in this house who spoke Spanish?" Eric looked at me with an odd expression.
"I think the Holts hired a couple of illegals on and off over the years, but as far as I know, they didn't have anyone working for them when they moved."
Dee Dee shrugged.
"Eric would know if anyone would. He's probably the only one on the block who was ever invited inside the Holt's house. And that wasn't even very often, because Mrs. Holt didn't like Adam to get the house messed up. So Adam didn't have very many friends. In fact, Eric was probably his only real friend." Don't make it sound like it's over and done with. Adam and I are still friends, Eric snapped.
Dad said that the Holtz got divorced, I told them. Does Adam live in Houston?
Dee Dee shifted on the couch, but Eric said, Adam had to live with his mother in California.
Where in California?
It's a little town, Cedar Creek.
He scowled.
What difference does it make?
I leaned forward. Tell me about the Holtz. What were they like?
Dee Dee twisted her fingers together.
The Holtz are history. There's a lot more interesting stuff to talk about.
Eric studied my face. Why are you asking so many questions, Sarah? And what's all this about someone speaking Spanish?
There was no way I was going to tell them what had happened to me in this house. I fumbled for an answer.
We're living in the Holtz house. It makes me curious. And Dee Dee's parents have a Spanish-speaking maid, so I just sort of wondered if the Holtz had one, too.
I didn't sound convincing, not even to myself.
Dee Dee threw Eric a frantic look, as though she were asking for help. He ignored her, so she jumped to her feet and said, I've really got to go. I'm supposed to babysit tonight, and I have to wash my hair and do a lot of stuff.
Maybe Eric could tell me what I wanted to know.
Eric, you don't have to go, do you?
The words came out so eagerly, I wished I could take them back. He was going to get the wrong idea. I felt myself blushing.
Dee Dee looked a little surprised, but Eric stood up and stretched, a smug expression on his face. It's tough to disappoint you, Sarah, but I never date girls who are taller than I am, he said.
I couldn't help it. I laughed. For a few moments, Eric glowered at me.
That was rude, I mumbled. I'm sorry. My apology didn't help. He was angry, so I was surprised when he said, There is a guy you ought to meet, though. He's tall, and he likes tall girls.
Yeah. The more I think about it, the better I like the idea. I think he would, too.
Dee Dee looked at Eric sharply.
What's his name?
Anthony's his name, but we call him Tony. Tony Harris.
Eric grinned and added, You don't know him.
Does he go to Memorial?
No, he doesn't, and it's none of your business anyway. He wouldn't be interested in you.
You're a conceited jerk, she said.
And you're a nerd.
Trying to head off any more insults, I steered Dee Dee toward the door.
I wish you'd come over tomorrow morning, I told her. Have you got a bike? Maybe we could go for a ride and you could show me around the neighborhood.
Okay, Dee Dee said. If you want to. She looked at me unhappily, as though there was a lot more on her mind she'd like to say, but didn't know how.
Eric edged past us through the open door.
I'll get back to you about Tony, he told me.
There was a mischievous, mocking look on his face that bothered me.
Dee Dee watched him walk out of earshot, then turned to me and said, Sarah, I like you. I'd really like us to be friends. And it's not my fault. I mean, I hope you can understand. And it really doesn't matter because...
I put a hand on her arm, interrupting her.
What are you talking about, Dee Dee?
She looked down at the ground a moment, then up again, and her pale blue eyes stared into mine.
Don't mind the way I rattle on. Just promise me, please, that you'll stop talking about the Holtz.
If it bothers you so much, I answered slowly.
It bothers me a lot, she said. She backed away, moving toward the lawn. See you tomorrow, okay?
I smiled at her.
Sure, tomorrow.
As I shut the door, the house seemed to sigh as though glad the visitors had gone.
A few hours later, Dad arrived home. His face was gray as he called Mom and me into the den.
Sit down, he said.
Please, sit down. I've got something to tell you.
Your job, Mom gasped as she slowly lowered herself into one of the chairs. They just gave you a promotion. They wouldn't...
Dad shook his head impatiently.
No, Dorothy. I haven't lost my job. It's something else, and it may or may not turn out to be a problem.
He tossed a quick, nervous look in my direction before he turned back to Mom.
I feel as though we've been cheated.
Legally, she was correct, but ethically, what she did was wrong. And the neighbors,
Not one of them gave me the facts. I resent that.
Ron, Mom said, make sense. What are you talking about?
Dad took a deep breath. I'm trying to make excuses for myself, he said. I'll get to the point. He sat on the edge of the sofa next to me and leaned toward Mom. Evelyn Pritchard didn't tell me the reason why this house hadn't sold, why it was priced so far below market value. I found out today when one of the secretaries in the office recognized our address. Dad paused and glanced toward the entry hall as he added, Just a little over 2 years ago, a murder took place inside this house. Chapter 4 Suddenly, the vision of the blood on the tiles and the voice calling for help made sense. They were real. They had taken place in this house, and I had picked up on them. I'd seen the aftermath, but what about the murder itself? I shuddered and rubbed my arms, trying to warm them. Why was someone trying to involve me in this? Mom's eyes sparked with anger, and her words were as clipped and sharp as if they were burning her tongue. Evelyn Pritchard should have told you about the murder, Ron. Or one of the neighbors should have spoken up. She stood and paced to the door and back, then suddenly dropped into her chair again, her fingertips white as she gripped the chair arms. Today I was very pointedly told that Evelyn is a wonderful friend and neighbor. The people on this block were shielding her, and that's not fair.
It was more than that, Dad explained, bitterness in his voice. The empty house hurt everyone's property values.
I thought our neighbors were going to be nice people. I'd hoped they'd be friends.
Mom reached over to take Dad's hand and asked, Oh, Ron, what are we going to do?
Dad sighed.
I've already spoken to an attorney. Legally, what Evelyn did was acceptable. All we can do is try to sell the house.
He added, if that's our decision.
If?
Mom asked.
We have to face facts, Dorothy. Look how long this house was on the market before we bought it. We can't afford to rent or buy another place to live in while we wait to see if someone wants to buy this. And when we tell them the situation,
he said quietly,
we'd have to. We couldn't do what Evelyn did.
No.
Mom said, we couldn't. They both glanced toward me as though the thought had struck them at the same time.
Sarah, Mom said, something about the house frightened you when you first set foot in it. What was it? You didn't...
She took a deep breath, steadying herself.
That strange feeling didn't come back, did it?
No, it didn't. It's never coming back.
What else could I tell them? Dad had just pointed out that we couldn't afford to make 2 monthly house payments. They were both watching me, waiting for more of an answer. So I tried to choose my words carefully and said,
Didn't you ever walk in on two people who'd just had an argument? You can feel the tension in the air. That's the best way to explain what I felt.
Mom's expression was so dubious that I smiled and added, Remember when we went to visit your cousin Linda and her husband? You said later you knew the minute you set foot in their house that they'd been having a terrible argument. You told us you could feel it in the air.
That was different, Mom said.
I just smiled again and shrugged. That desperate cry for help still gripped me, and I ached for the poor, terrified woman. I had said I would help her, and I keep my promises, so there was nothing more I could tell my parents.
Mom turned to Dad.
Are you sure there isn't some way to get out of this contract?
I'm positive. Dad let out an unhappy sigh. I made a stupid mistake in buying this house, he said. I was feeling so proud of myself, so glad to get such a bargain. I should have questioned why the house was so much below market value.
Both Mom and Dad looked so miserable that I felt guilty. If they weren't so worried about me... I tried to sound as matter-of-fact as I could and said, People don't tear down houses just because someone's been murdered in them. Other people buy those houses and live in them.
They stared at me, surprised, and I went on. This is the nicest house we've ever lived in. Let's enjoy it. The murder is over and done with. Mom, you didn't feel anything unusual in this house. Neither did Dad. It didn't bother you before you learned about the murder, so why get upset about it now?
Well, Mom hesitated. It's just knowing that...
Sarah is probably right, Dad said. He actually began to look hopeful. Mom glanced at the windows. Maybe we should have burglar bars installed on all the windows. If it was someone on drugs who broke in, looking for something to steal, it could happen again.
It wasn't like that. Dad shook his head.
What did happen? I asked Dad. The people who told you about the murder must have given you the whole story.
Are you sure you want to know?
Dad's face sagged. He looked terrible.
Yes, I answered. We're going to hear it sooner or later. We'd rather hear it from you.
Dad glanced at Mom for confirmation, and she gave a slight nod. So he said, I remember reading something about the murder in our Missouri newspaper, but at the time I didn't pay much attention. So when I arranged to buy the house, the address and the name Holt didn't mean anything.
You met the Holts when you signed the papers for the house, didn't you? Mom asked.
I met the father of the family, Martin Holt. He was a pleasant enough fellow, but his name still meant nothing to me.
Was it his wife who was murdered? Mom whispered. Or his son?
Neither. Dad took a deep breath and continued. A woman who lives on Fair Oaks Drive called a nearby Pizza Express and ordered a pizza. It was around 1 o'clock in the afternoon. She called a couple of times later, complaining that her order hadn't been delivered. The girl who had been hired to deliver pizzas hadn't come back to the restaurant for the next order, so around 2:30 the manager went looking for her. The boy who had taken the phone order had scribbled something on the order blank that looked like Fair Oaks Lane instead of Drive.
Fair Oaks Lane. Our street, Mom said.
Dad continued, his voice flat with the horror of what he had to tell. The manager found the Pizza Express delivery car parked about a block away on a side street. There was no sign of the girl, so he called the police. During their investigation, they went to this address on Fair Oaks Lane. No one was home, but the side door to our garage, the garage, was standing open, and they could see a crumpled box from Pizza Express. On the garage floor, tossed next to the trash can, were a rag with stains that looked like blood and a pair of blood-stained tennis shoes. Mom shuddered, hugging her arms and rubbing them as though she were cold.
Don't mind me, she said as Dad paused. Go on.
The police on the scene called in for a search warrant, Dad told us. And in the meantime, some other police officers and a film crew from a television station arrived. Some of the neighbors who were home came out to see what was going on. At this point, Adam Holt, the teenage son, drove into the street, saw the cars and people at his house, and did a U-turn, trying to get away. But a neighbor had seen him and pointed him out, so the police chased him for a few blocks and caught him. Adam Holt confessed to murdering the girl and told the police he had buried her body in a nearby woods. It was getting dark by this time, too late to search, so the police took him downtown and booked him.
Thank goodness they caught him, Mom said.
That's not quite all of it, Dad said. When the detectives arrived at the Holt house with a search warrant, they discovered that the parents had arrived home. In fact, they'd been home for about 20 minutes. Their son had attempted to clean up some of the blood, but hadn't done a very good job of it, so they'd seen
the blood on the walls and floor of the entry hall, I said, interrupting.
Yes, and some stains on the stairway carpet that hadn't come out.
Dad stopped and looked at me with a puzzled expression.
How did you know about the blood?
It figures. Go on, I answered quickly. Tell us the rest.
He did. Although the parents had found their son missing and the bloodstains in the entry hall, they hadn't called the police. When they were informed about what had happened, Mr. Holt immediately hired an attorney for his son.
How old was Adam Holt? I asked.
Only 17, Dad said.
Why did he kill the girl?
Apparently, from what he first told the police, he tried to force her into the house. She fought back, so he stabbed her.
That's horrible. I hope he got life imprisonment.
He's not in prison, Dad said. His attorney kept him from making a written or taped confession, and an oral confession that hasn't been tape-recorded or witnessed by someone other than a police officer isn't admissible as evidence in the state of Texas. When Adam Holt came to trial, the judge allowed the oral confession as evidence, in spite of the law, and the jury convicted Adam of murder in the first degree. The defense attorney appealed, and the conviction was thrown out by a higher court.
But the blood! The pizza box in his garage! Wouldn't that be enough evidence? Mom asked.
No, apparently not. There was no one to place him at the scene of the crime. Adam Holt was never put on the witness stand. His defense had been that he had been ill with the flu, was having an allergic reaction to his medication, and didn't know what he was doing or even where he was at the time. Without an eyewitness to place Adam at the scene of the crime, the district attorney couldn't make a strong enough case.
That's crazy.
But that's Texas law, Dad said. I was told it's the only state that won't allow an unrecorded oral confession as evidence.
You didn't tell us if they found the girl's body, I said.
They did, but not in the general area the Holt boy had indicated. It was on the opposite side of Houston. A gas station attendant happened to be watching the 10 o'clock news, saw Adam's picture, and remembered filling the tank of his car earlier in the day, so he called the police. The gas station was near a rarely used unpaved road that was muddy from recent rains. Adam's car was caked with mud, so the attendant knew he'd been back in the woods. Early the next morning, as soon as it was light, the police checked the area the attendant had described and found the murdered girl's body there.
Well, I should think that would be enough evidence against him, Mom insisted.
I guess it wasn't strong enough to warrant another trial. It was still only circumstantial.
It's so different on those television shows, Mom said. They're always trying the wrong person, but the attorney holds up something like a matchbook cover or a piece of an earring and says to the guilty person, "This means you were the real murderer," and they arrest the guilty one and let the innocent one go.
It's a lot more complicated than that in real life, Dad told her.
There's something weird about the story you told us, I said to Dad. Why would Adam confess to the crime and then lie about where he'd put the body?
Some people get so mixed up in lies they're unable to differentiate between lies and truth, Dad explained.
It's the parents I don't understand, Mom said. If I came home and found my child missing and blood on the walls and floor, the first thing I'd do would be to call the police.
She looked at me as though to prove I were still here in one piece and added,
I can't help worrying about the effect this house might have on Sarah.
I tried a laugh, and it came out a little shaky. Remember that old-fashioned hotel in Colorado where we vacationed 2 summers ago? The manager told us about the shootouts and murders that had taken place in their lobby and saloon back in the days of the Wild West. We just thought of it as an interesting part of history, and it didn't bother our sleep, right?
Sweetheart, that was different.
Not really, Mom. Those ranch hands, even the gunslingers, were real people. They didn't want to die either.
Mom persisted. It's different because you're different. When we stayed at that hotel, it was before... Well, before you began having those hallucinations.
I got up and walked to the window. The sun's heat was shimmering in waves from the street and sidewalk, but the house was cold, much too cold. "The presence that followed me is gone, Mom. I told you that."
"Well," Mom hesitated.
"Dorothy, listen to Sarah. Whatever happened here is over and done with," Dad said. His voice was firm again, and color had come back into his face, but his voice dropped as he added, "I honestly don't see what other choice we can make for the moment."
Mom thought a moment, then said, "I want to do whatever is best for Sarah, but I don't know what that is. All we can do is leave the decision up to her." The air shifted. I found myself in a different time and place. I took a deep breath, inhaling a pungent scent of cloves from the kitchen and stale tobacco smoke from the drapes. As deep shadows stretched like spread fingers across the thick and ragged lawn below the window, I began to feel the quiet presence of the woman. Although I couldn't see her, I recognized the warm, spicy, sour scent of her skin. Her voice spoke within my head, begging me, frantically pleading, "Ayúdame, por favor." "Who are you?" I didn't speak the words, I thought them. The answer came, but I didn't understand. "I don't know what you're saying. You'll have to help me." A word, hoarse with tears, slid into my mind. Muerte. Muerte? I knew that word. Death. I gasped as the realization struck me. "Are you the one who was murdered here?" The tears were so real that I could feel them damp against my cheek. "Ayúdame," she whispered. "Sarah?" Mom asked. "Did you hear me? Is something the matter?" I closed my eyes, willing myself back to the present. When I opened them, the room was normal, but the voice lingered in my mind. "What is it?" I got dizzy for a minute. "I'm all right now," I told her. I was afraid of the woman who spoke to me, yet at the same time, by agreeing to help her and become a link between this woman's world and mine, I had a strange yearning to see her, to reassure her. She had reached out to me, and I couldn't turn away from her cry for help.
"Are you sure you're all right?" Mom asked.
"Positive."
Dad sat forward on the edge of the sofa.
"We need your decision, Sarah. It's important to us."
"I want to live here, in this house," I answered. The air that riffled against my cheek was like the soft touch of a warm hand.
"Then as far as I'm concerned, it's decided. We'll stay," Mom told Dad. He leaned against the back of the sofa and gave a sigh of relief. We all jumped at the ring of the telephone.
"I'll answer," I said.
"Hey, Sarah," Eric said. "I talked to that guy about you."
"What guy?" I was still so deeply into what Dad had told us that I didn't know what Eric was talking about.
"Tony Harris, remember? The tall guy who likes tall girls."
A strange tone came into Eric's voice, as though he were secretly laughing at me.
"Tony wants to meet you."
I don't think so, I told him. I was uncomfortable with Eric.
"We've just moved in. I want to get used to Houston first. I'm not ready to start dating yet."
Mom, who had picked up a magazine, pretending to read it, was suddenly alert. She motioned to me, smiling and mouthing, "Who is it?"
"Are you there?" Eric asked. "Did you hear what I said?"
"I'm sorry," I answered, deliberately turning my back on Mom. "My mother was trying to tell me something, so I was distracted. What did you say?"
"I said, if you haven't had dinner yet, Tony knows this great Mexican restaurant, and he could meet us there."
"Why can't Tony come here?"
"The restaurant's in West University. It would be kind of crazy if he drove all the way here to pick you up, then drove all the way back, wouldn't it?"
I was on firm ground now.
"My parents won't let me date someone they haven't met." It isn't really a date, Eric said. Anyhow, I'll be with you. I'll come over and meet them.
His voice became mocking again.
They can even meet my parents if they're so protective of their darling daughter.
My face grew hot. I didn't know if I was blushing because I was embarrassed or angry.
Forget it, I snapped.
It was Eric's turn to be embarrassed.
Hey, I'm sorry, he said. That's just my brand of humor. Dee Dee says it's cruel. Maybe she's right. I should have realized you aren't used to it yet. I was just trying to be funny.
It wasn't funny.
I'll come over right now, Eric said. I was so sure you'd want to meet Tony that I set up the plan. Tony was going out to run some errands, so I can't call him back. He'll be waiting in the restaurant for us. Please say you'll come, Sarah, okay?
Grudgingly, I agreed. Well, all right. Come on over.
Great, he said. I'll be there in 5 minutes. And he slammed down the receiver.
I turned to Mom and said, before she could ask, That was Eric Hendrickson. He wants to take me to dinner at a Mexican restaurant in West University so I can meet a friend of his who wants to meet me. Mom was dubious.
Eric? The boy who asked for a beer?
Dad looked puzzled, so she explained.
He was probably showing off a little because he's 2 years older than Sarah, Dad said and smiled. I remember what being 18 was like.
The doorbell rang, and I ran to answer, leading Eric into the den. He was polite and friendly, and I could see Mom melt.
I'll take very good care of Sarah and make sure she's home early, Eric said, with such sincerity it made me want to gag.
Mom beamed at him and said to me, If you'd like to go with Eric to meet his friend Tony, we have no objections. You need to make friends in Houston, Sarah. I couldn't think of a good reason to refuse, so I excused myself to put on a skirt and blouse. I picked up my hairbrush, then put it down again, slowly turning from my bedroom mirror to face the room. The air was trembling against the back of my neck. I groaned and murmured, Don't do this to me. Not now. Go away. Groping for the little Spanish I remembered from lessons in elementary school, I found the word and said, Váyase. The silence that followed was as taut as a held breath. Feeling a little guilty, I waited. Finally, I whispered, I don't know what you want yet, but I'll try to find out. I promise to help you, but you can't keep pestering me, okay? There was no answer, only the icy tickle of someone else's fear.
Chapter 5
Sarah, what's keeping you? Eric called from the foot of the stairs. The tension in my room shattered.
Coming, I yelled. I brushed back my hair, snatched up my shoulder bag, and ran down the stairs. Eric drove a white BMW. He told me about his car in great detail while I made appropriate murmurs and wished we could talk about something more interesting. Then, abruptly, he asked,
Why did you tell Dee Dee that the Holt house scares you?
I said the house was weird, that's all.
The word Dee Dee used was scared.
He quickly turned to look at me, his eyes crinkling at the corners as though he were enjoying a secret laugh at my expense before he faced the road again.
You'll find out sooner or later that Dee Dee is a mouth. If you tell her anything, she spills it.
Come off it, I muttered. There's no secret to enjoy at my expense any longer. We know about the murder. The car swerved slightly, and the driver in the car in the next lane leaned on his horn. Before Eric could answer, I said, It was bad enough for Dee Dee's mother not to tell Dad about the murder. But what about the rest of you? Why didn't your parents tell him the truth before he bought the house? He looked embarrassed.
What were we supposed to do, put a sign in the front yard? A murder took place in this house? Frankly, we were all glad when the house was sold.
Would you like to live in a house where a murder took place? Eric shrugged.
It wouldn't bother me. What's the big deal? You don't believe in ghosts, do you?
Let's talk about something else, I said. Tell me about the high school.
He did, and it filled the time until we arrived at the restaurant.
Tony Harris was waiting for us just inside the door. As we entered, standing under a bright pool of light from a multicolored glass chandelier, he stepped from the shadows and smiled. He didn't even glance at Eric. His eyes, a vibrant blue, locked into mine, and I caught my breath. Tony seemed older than Eric. He was tall, about 2 inches taller than I am. He was broad-shouldered but slender, and his hair and mustache were dark brown.
"Hello, Sarah," he said, in a voice as soft as dark silk. Infatuation. I had heard the word. Suddenly, I knew what it meant, how exciting it could be. I moved a little closer to him, unable to look away, mesmerized by his voice and his eyes. Tony wasn't that handsome. He was really kind of average-looking. But there was something different, something exciting behind his smile, and something so demanding in his look that shivers ran up my spine. He reached out and took my hand, and I grasped his fingers willingly.
"Come on, old buddy," Eric said, and slapped Tony on the shoulder. "I'm starving. You and Sarah can get acquainted while we eat."
Tony, still holding my hand, turned to follow the restaurant's hostess, but the spell hadn't broken. I was drawn to Tony, hungry to look back into his eyes. The sensation startled me. I'd never felt like this about anyone before. Andy? No. I could hardly remember Andy's face. We were ushered into a booth. Eric pushed me in first, then slid in next to me. Tony sat across from me. As we ate and talked, Eric proudly told us about some of the practical jokes he'd played on unsuspecting friends, especially the mean, embarrassing practical jokes. I disliked Eric even more and wished he'd be quiet. I wasn't interested in him. I was interested in Tony. But while Eric was talking, he had Tony's attention, and that gave me a chance to study Tony without his noticing it. I liked his smile and the way he lifted back his head when he laughed. Tony had a quiet nature. He was somewhat of a loner, he told me, when Eric finally gave him a chance, and we talked about books. We both liked biographies and mysteries. I was surprised that our tastes were so much alike and felt even more drawn toward Tony. I was eager to learn all about him. As he reached across the table for the bowl of salsa, the sleeve of his long-sleeved sport shirt pulled back from his wrist, and I noticed an irregular purple mark the size of a quarter. Tony turned, caught my glance at his wrist, and tugged down the cuff of his sleeve. It surprised me. I didn't think he would be the type to be self-conscious about a birthmark. Lots of people have them. Eric suddenly gulped down what was left of his iced tea and looked at me with such a wicked smile I was startled. "What's the matter with you?" I began. But Eric quickly turned away and squeezed out of the booth. "I've got some errands to run," he said. Reluctantly, I gathered up my shoulder bag and started to follow him. But Tony reached across the booth, his fingers closing firmly on my arm.
"Don't go," he said. "I'll take you home."
"Good idea. Why don't you do that?" Eric said. His face was serious, but that strange smile had moved into his eyes. Was he planning another practical joke, at my expense? I didn't know how to protect myself against him. Eric turned and said to me, "There's a guy I've got to see. It will work out a lot better for me if Tony gives you a ride home."
"You told Mom," I began, but Eric was already halfway to the restaurant door.
Flustered, I stammered to Tony, "I'm supposed to be home early." My breath caught in my throat, and I felt a little scared, maybe because of the feelings I had for Tony. I didn't understand them. I knew very little about him, but when he smiled at me, nothing else seemed to matter.
The waitress flew past, slapping the check on the table. Tony pulled out his wallet and paid the bill. He edged out of the booth, unfolding his long legs, and reached out a hand to me.
"I'll take you home now," he said.
His black sports car, with its dark-tinted glass, had a clean, fresh, new car smell, and the dashboard gleamed. He fussed with the car, adjusting the rearview mirrors, checking the digital clock light, and fiddling with the radio until he found a station he liked. He kept the music low as he drove north on Kirby.
"Have you seen much of Houston?" he asked.
"Hardly any of it," I answered. Tony turned to me and smiled.
"We can take care of that."
I could feel myself melting into his smile, so I struggled to stay clear-headed, saying the first thing that came into my mind.
"Tell me about yourself. Where did you meet Eric?" "We used to be in school together."
"But you're older than he is."
"Not much more than a year," he grinned. "It's the mustache that gives me that older, distinguished look."
I laughed with him. "Are you in college?"
"Not right now. I've been busy with other things. I might go east to school. I haven't made up my mind yet."
"Do you know what you want to study?"
"I've been thinking about pre-law. I might like to be a lawyer."
As we turned left onto a tree-lined street named San Felipe, Tony reached over and took my hand. I could feel the warmth spread all the way through my body. I was glad it was so dark that Tony couldn't see the flush on my cheeks.
"Enough questions from you," Tony said. "It's my turn to ask a few."
"Eric told me that you were frightened by something in your house. What was it?" I glanced at him quickly, but he looked straight ahead, waiting for my answer. I wasn't about to tell him. I remembered too well the expressions on the faces of my friends when I'd been open with them about the spirit that had shadowed me.
It wasn't really anything," I managed to tell Tony.
"It was just a feeling I had when I entered the house for the first time."
"What kind of feeling?"
"I don't know how to describe it." We stopped for a red light, and Tony turned toward me, his eyes drilling into mine.
"Try."
I shivered, and Tony immediately began adjusting the vents for the air conditioner.
"I'm sorry," he said. "You've been getting the full blast. Is that better?"
"Yes," I paused. "I don't know what you want me to tell you, or why." His smile was easy. We were back in traffic, and his attention was on the road.
"Just curious," he said. "Your reaction to the house, according to what Dee Dee told Eric, was unusual, to say the least."
"I never should have talked about it to Dee Dee. She blew it all out of proportion."
"Do you know what happened in that house?"
"Yes, the murder." I shivered again, and this time it was not because of the air conditioner. "Why don't we talk about something else?" A short time before, I'd been trying to get more information about the Holtz, but I didn't want it now. Not from Tony.
"Don't you think the story of the murder is interesting?"
"Interesting? No. I don't want to think about it at all."
"We knew Adam. Did Eric tell you?"
"Yes. Eric says that he and Adam are still friends."
"And that's because Eric believed Adam's claim that he was having a reaction to his medication and didn't know what he was doing. Not everyone bought that excuse."
I glanced at him sharply. "Do you believe Adam?"
"There's no reason why I shouldn't."
I was becoming very uncomfortable with this conversation. "I don't want to talk about Adam Holt," I told Tony. He looked at me sharply, then turned away. I couldn't catch the expression on his face.
"According to Eric, you had a lot of questions to ask."
"I know, but..."
"Like wondering who in the household spoke Spanish. That's a strange question. Why did you want to know?"
"Does it matter?"
"No, it just seemed like an unusual thing for you to ask. If there's something about the house that bothers you and you want to talk about it, I won't put you off the way Eric and Dee Dee did. I'll listen. I'll listen to anything you'd like to tell me, Sarah.
Tony's voice was deep and soothing, and I began to relax. But I was determined not to tell Tony what I had heard and seen. Strange Sarah. I couldn't let Tony think that of me.
Thanks, I told him, trying to keep my voice light. But there really isn't anything to tell. Let's talk about something else. Anything at all.
Anything at all?
Tony's eyes sparked with the kind of wicked gleam I'd seen in Eric's.
Okay. There's something else I'd like to talk about.
His fingers tightened on mine, and his thumb stroked the back of my hand.
Have you ever been in love, Sarah?
Again, he'd caught me off balance. My hand tingled, and it was hard to breathe.
No, I said, stuttering. Not really.
A beautiful girl like you? That's hard to believe.
We came to another stoplight, and he turned to smile at me.
Have you ever wondered what it would be like?
I leaned a little closer to him, as though my body were behaving independently of my mind, as though Tony and I were magnets being drawn together. The way I was reacting frightened me. I inched back against the seat and said as firmly as I could, Tony, I just met you. I've only known you for a couple of hours.
A lot can happen in a couple of hours, Sarah. His voice was low, the way it was when he first said my name. Again, shivers ran up and down my backbone.
Please, Tony, take it easy. I was surprised to see him make a left turn into the driveway of our house. I hadn't been paying attention to the route. I didn't know we were so close to home. I pulled my hand away from his.
Why don't you come in and meet my mom and dad?
I'd like that, Tony said. But we'll have to plan introductions for the next time. I'm supposed to pick up my own mom at 9:30. He glanced at the digital clock on the dashboard. I'm going to be late as it is.
They'll ask about you, since you brought me home instead of Eric.
Tony reached over and lightly ran one fingertip down the side of my face, resting it for just an instant on my lips. I trembled and sucked in my breath. His eyes were so demanding, so intense. He leaned back and smiled at me.
I'll meet them next time, Sarah, he said. Obviously, he was waiting for me to get out of the car. He must have been unaware of the effect he was having on me, and I was thankful. I didn't understand the peculiar sensations in my body or how to control them.
Thanks for dinner. I like the restaurant, I said, still stammering. I was reluctant to see him go and angry with myself for feeling that way. As I walked toward the front door, Tony lowered the window on the driver's side and said, I'll call you soon. I got your telephone number from Eric. I gave a quick wave of the hand as I turned and hurried to unlock the front door. I desperately wanted him to call me, and I was afraid it must show in my eyes. My face still tingled where his fingertip had touched it. Alone, in the entry hall, I heard the whispery noises again, and little scuttling sounds seemed to scurry throughout the house. Beside me, the stairway creaked, and I ran to join Mom and Dad. Of course they had questions about Tony. I knew they would. Mom flipped off the television set and slipped her shoes back on.
He could have come in for just a few minutes, she complained.
Tony had to pick up his mother, and he was late.
We like to know who you're going out with, Mom continued. Eric had promised he'd take you home.
I was uncomfortable with the disapproval in her voice. I wanted her to like Tony.
You'll meet Tony soon, I told her. He said he'd call me. And you'll like him. He's wonderful.
I couldn't help blushing. And to my relief, Mom laughed.
When I was your age, she said, I had the most awful crush on a boy in my class. I blushed every time he looked in my direction.
This wasn't a crush. The feeling I had for Tony was very different.
It was exciting and wonderful and scary all at the same time. I didn't want to tell Mom that. I just wanted to hug it to myself, not sharing it with anyone.
"This has been an exhausting day," Dad said. He stood and stretched. "I'm ready for bed."
Mom said, "It takes a while, doesn't it, to get used to new places and new ways?" She put an arm around his waist and rested her head against his. "Do you miss the Missouri office?" There was such wistfulness in her voice that he hugged her shoulders tightly.
"In any move, there's bound to be a few new ways to get used to, but everyone in the department's been friendly. Well, almost everyone."
He smiled.
"I suppose there's at least one stumbling block in every office, maybe to keep life from getting too routine."
He paused before he asked, "Did I ask too much? Is this move too hard on you, Dorothy?" "I've shed a few tears," Mom said. She straightened and smiled at Dad. "But I'm a survivor. As soon as the house is put together, I'll go job hunting. As for tomorrow, I'm going to start hanging pictures." She headed toward the kitchen, saying as she'd done for years, "I'll check to see if the doors are locked." Dad turned off the reading lamp next to his chair and walked toward the hall. He stopped and waited for me.
"Coming, Sarah?"
I realized that ever since I'd walked into the house, I'd been waiting for another contact from the woman. A question suddenly popped into my mind. "Dad," I asked, "that woman who was murdered, what was her name?" He sighed.
"I don't think we should get into that again."
"I'm not going to talk about it," I said. "I only want to know the woman's name." He frowned, trying to remember. "It was Darlene."
"Darlene what?"
"Let's see.
Garwood?
No. That's close, but it was something else. More rhythmic. Garwood. Garland. That's it. Darlene Garland." "Are you sure? That name doesn't fit someone who only spoke Spanish."
"I don't know where you got the idea that she only spoke Spanish. She would have had to speak English to hold the kind of job she had, especially in this neighborhood where most of the people speak English."
Dad looked at me with a kind of funny expression on his face, so I quickly said, "I guess I was confused. There was so much to think about."
"Yes," he said, "there was."
He put an arm around my shoulder and kissed my forehead.
"I'm proud of you, Sarah. If you'd been afraid to live in this house, I don't know what we would have done."